This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 years ago today, American-led forces were poised to begin the invasion of Iraq. President Bush said that diplomacy had failed. The majority of the UN Security Council disagreed. The president said Iraq had stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons which they might provide to terrorists. No weapons of mass destruction were found, and Iraq's ties to al-Qaeda proved to be tenuous at best. The president said Saddam Hussein had brutalized his own people. The bodies of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were found in mass graves, and the president said that a democracy in Iraq could be an engine of change in the Middle East, and change is indeed underway. The price these past 2 years includes more than 1,500 American troops killed and more than 10,000 wounded. The number of Iraqi dead is unknown. Estimates begin at more than 16,000. So far, the government has spent nearly $280 billion on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A new poll out this week shows public opinion mixed. Almost two-thirds of Americans are optimistic about democracy in Iraq and the Middle East. A smaller majority, 53%, says it wasn't worth going to war in the first place. 70% say the level of American casualties has been unacceptably high. 2 years into the war, was it worth it? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We begin here in Studio 3A with Professor David Trettler, a retired Air Force colonel and a faculty member at the National War College in Washington, D.C. And thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
The war is not over yet. Is it possible to judge whether it was worth it?
I think it's very hard at this point because the fundamental judgment that you have to make is, does the war accomplish what you set out to achieve? I think now that we've moved past the point where we're looking for weapons of mass destruction to the point where we're thinking about remaking Iraq in various shapes, form, and fashions, that's a long-term question. And we're not going to know if it's worth it, I think, until that's settled out.
You say it's whether we met the aims that we had going into the war. In the course of a conflict, don't those aims tend to change over time?
Oftentimes. Most of the time when you look at wars, you'll see that the aims change as you go along. In part, that's due to changing perceptions of what you can accomplish. In part, it's due to circumstances. We've seen in this war a change from emphasis on the weapons of mass destruction to the democratization angle. Again, how that plays out in the long run, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Are there criteria by which military historians judge a war? What are they?
Not really concrete ones. Again, the fundamental criteria is, does it achieve the political aims? A secondary consideration would be, does it do so at a cost that seems proportional to the aim that was being sought? And then finally, I think what you would come down to in the end as a military historian looking back is, does the war produce more good than ill in the long run?
The question of casualties, as you heard in that poll, the great majority of Americans think that the number of casualties thus far is unacceptably high. This may be a function of the way the question was phrased. Any level of casualties is unacceptably high, perhaps. But on the other hand, political support for a conflict is incredibly important. This war is a long way from over.
Absolutely. And the casualty question is really tied again to the perception of the objective. If the population feels that the objective is important, is critical to its own security, its own interests, it's willing to tolerate a relatively high level of casualties and of dollar cost. If their perception is that the end being sought is not that important to the nation, then the tolerance for casualties goes down.
Even in this post-Vietnam era where we were supposed to be, the United States was thought to be casualty averse. That was the theory by which Americans were bombed out of Lebanon, the theory of which Americans were shot out of Somalia.
Well, I think again, we are averse to casualties for purposes that we don't think are important. I think 9/11 changed our perceptions of lots of things, and the president and the administration was able to build on that and persuade the American population that this was an important endeavor. As a result, they're willing to spend money, they're willing to spend lives.
As you look at this, how would you caution people, some examples perhaps 2 or 3 years into other conflicts, not to be too hasty to make judgments?
Well, I think that that's... Again, when we're talking about trying to remake a society, mm-hmm. and And the critical factor is creating changes in their political, economic, social, cultural structures in ways that will support the kind of polity we think we want in Iraq. Those just are very long-term changes.
In that sense, more comparable to the occupations of Japan and Germany.
More comparable, but not exactly.
Of course, nothing's an exact analogy. If you could draw an analogy, are there any that you can think of?
For me, I think the closest analogy is more Vietnam than it is Germany or Japan. You have a society that was fractured in many ways, functioned poorly in many ways, and the notion that we can remake that in a simple fashion is a very simplistic one. The key is going to be how well the Iraqis do at creating a government that serves the needs of their people. They have a long road to go down. And to reach a self-sustaining state is going to be a difficult and long proposition.
Are the measuring sticks that we should use from here on out military or political?
Political. 100% political, economic, social, cultural. The military measuring stick is simply the sole task at this point, really, is simply to provide security. Beyond that, the task lies with folks who work in other realms in the military realm.
Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking right now with David Trettler, professor at the National War College, a retired colonel in the United States Air Force. Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Cy, who's calling from Vestal, New York.
Yes, thank you. I was interested in the lead-in where the one gentleman said that he'd rather fight the war over there than fight it here, which seems to beg the question about whether they should have fought it in the first place. I mean, the issue of weapons of mass destruction has certainly been addressed, and the report from the committee also addressed the fact that there was no Saddam Hussein al-Qaeda link.
And so the question being, this is goes back to the Bush administration's tying 9/11 to Iraq in a broad sense, though if pressed, administration spokesman would say that Iraq had nothing specifically to do with 9/11. So it's a question of, am I getting this right, Cy, is whether this is a war in Iraq or part of the war on terrorism?
Yes, I think that that's an important part of it. I think the other part of it is, did the quote-unquote reasons actually mean anything, or was it just a case of throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what stuck? You know, now democratization is the latest. And it just seems to be kind of troubling the extent to which it shifts, not that there can't be any and not that circumstances don't change, but it seemed to be more of an excuse than a reason.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think that it's hard to make the judgment that the administration was just throwing stuff against the wall to see if it would stick. I think that there was a genuine conviction that that terrorism presented a very real, a very imminent danger, and that Iraq was part of that problem. Now, that may have been a misperception on their part, but I think that was an honest perception on their part. And I think that the notion still pertains within the administration that it is useful to see if we can take on and defeat the terrorists across the water rather than at this point in time. Whether that's a right judgment or not, I think time's going to tell. But I think that's the rationale that's being used.
Cy, thanks for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Chris. And Chris is calling us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Good afternoon. I was wondering what your guests think of the loss of American prestige from because of the Iraq war, because of the scandals such as the Abu Ghraib scandal and the lack of planning for the post-war period that led to such chaos in the immediate post-war period, and if the loss of American prestige in credibility is you know was worth
that's
worth.
Certainly part of the price that this conflict has assessed.
Absolutely, and again, I think that will be judged in the long term rather than in the short term. There's no question we have lost prestige. We've lost some credibility. We've lost some influence. If in the end we produce something close to what the administration thinks it's going to produce, much of that, I think, will be forgiven.
Chris, do you feel that way? I guess Chris has left us. Anyway, thank him for the phone call. Again, obviously this looks down the road. But the broader question of change in the Middle East, that is a question, that and Iraqi democracy are the linchpins of the administration's position, at least now. And that, do you think, is going to be the question on which this will be judged?
I think so. I think in the long run, whether the administration's perception of democratization in the Middle East and Iraq having a leavening effect, whether that plays out more to their advantage or not to their advantage will be the deciding factor, I think.
And we have seen some democratic reforms underway in other countries. The degree to which they are real and the degree to which they are superficial, again, time will tell.
I would say we've seen the very beginnings, the very first glimmerings of possible changes. I think there's a lot, again, that that needs to play out.
The conflict comes home in a lot of different ways. One of the ways is that the leaders of the leaders of the countries that led the charge into Iraq, and you could include President Bush, Prime Minister Tony Blair, and the Prime Minister Howard of Australia, all of them have Prime Minister Blair is coming up for re-election. President Bush and Prime Minister Howard have already been re-elected. It looks as if opinion polls hold, Prime Minister Blair will enjoy a victory in his election as well. It is also worth pointing out that a supporter of the war, President Aznar's party in Spain, suffered a defeat. But the political price, the leaders of this war have not been asked by their electorates to pay it.
No, they have not. And again, I think this speaks to a couple of things. One, I think 9/11 was a very sobering event for folks here and overseas in many ways. I think that Saddam was perceived as a bad guy, and I think the notion that he is now gone is seen as a positive thing. And I think that there is a perception among a great many people that there is a broader danger from terrorists of various kinds in various places. So that the strong leadership that these folks have provided against this kind of activity has been seen as a positive attribute by enough folks to get them elected. Those are very close elections in every case. It's nearly a 50-50 split, but still it's there.
Thank you very much. David Trettler is a colonel, retired in the United States Air Force, and a faculty member at the National War College here in Washington, D.C. He joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a break, we'll check in with an early proponent of the war and an early opponent. 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The second anniversary of the invasion of Iraq arrives this Saturday. Today we ask, based on what we know now, was it worth it? You're invited to join the discussion with your answer to that question or with your struggle over how to decide how do you weigh the development of democracy against lives lost or the failure to find weapons of mass destruction against the deposition of a dictator. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us now is Max Boot, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, author of The Savage Wars of Peace, Small Wars and the Rise of American Power. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks very much.
We spoke with you before the war began 2 years ago. You were a strong supporter then. Looking back almost 2 years afterwards, was it worth it?
It's hard to say ultimately whether it was worth it until we know what the final outcome is. If the final outcome, as increasingly looks likely, is a relatively stable and democratic Iraq and a region that's moving in the same direction, then yes, I would say definitely it's worth it, because I think the long-term result of that is to forestall more terrorist attacks on the United States and our allies. Obviously, at the moment, what we're mostly aware of is not the potential long-term benefits, but the immediate short-term costs, which are considerable and much higher than I think anybody anticipated when you look at the price tag, either in terms of dollars, which is over $200 billion, or especially in lives, which is 1,500 lives, each one of which is precious and a great tragedy to be lost, 1,500 American lives. Of course, there are many other Iraqi and British, Italian, and others who have, mm-hmm. who have died as well. But ultimately, I think, you know, no war can be undertaken lightly, and clearly this one has had a considerable cost. But I think the ultimate repercussions are still moving in a positive direction. I think may well be even more positive a few years from now.
Things have not gone well at all times since the toppling of Saddam. Have you had any doubts over the past couple of years?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've had my black moments like anybody else. It's hard not to when all you see on the news are stories about terrorist bombings and Americans dying and getting blown up. I mean, nobody can look at that and not be shaken a little bit, and I've been shaken many times. but I've never completely lost my belief in the righteousness of the cause or the probability of American victory, and I think both will ultimately be vindicated by events.
The original principal premise of this war, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction that it could well turn over to terrorists, that it did not prove out at all.
No, it didn't. But I don't think that the WMD rationale was totally spurious. I mean, in the first place, as we know, it was genuinely believed not only by the administration but by governments all over the world, including opponents of the war, such as France and Germany. So the charge made by people like Michael Moore that President Bush lied us into the war is simply false. It is true that we had faulty intelligence, which was deeply unfortunate. But what we do know from the reports of the post-war weapons inspectors, David Kay and Charles Delfer, is that even though Saddam Hussein did not have a stockpile of WMD as we thought, he certainly had plans to reconstitute his stockpile, and we do know that the sanctions regime was crumbling before we went in. We know now that Saddam Hussein had embezzled something like $20 billion out of the Oil for Food program, and that was a lot of money that could have been used to restart his WMD program. In fact, he did have plans to build longer-range missiles and to keep the nucleus of his other chemical and biological capacity so that he could reconstitute in the future. You know, the problem is we don't know what would have happened if Saddam Hussein had remained in power, but I think the probability is that the outcome would not have been a good one.
Let's get some callers back on the line and go to Michael. Michael's with us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment on the premise of this program and to make just pose one question. To me, it seems just a flawed premise to be able to ask us, you know, from the comfort of our homes here in the United States to judge for Iraqis whether this war was worth it or not, because we don't have to bear the cost that they have had to bear in being having a war fought on their soil, not only humanitarian the humanitarian consequences of the war, displacement and death, but just the society and upheaval. So I think it's an impossible thing to ask us to do, and in fact it's problematic as a premise. But I guess what I really want to ask is how. What I find very problematic is that this administration has done very well at systematically exaggerating the benefits of the war, sometimes down to the point of obscuring possibly the true motives for going into war to begin with. But they've systematically exaggerated the benefits of the war and systematically kept us from seeing the true costs of the war, particularly humanitarian costs on the Iraqi side. And we have to turn to people like, as your caller mentioned, Michael Moore, in order to be able to see footage of the consequences of our actions. These are policies that are undertaken in our names, and we're unable to see the consequences of them. So I think it just makes it very, very hard for us to be able to judge the consequences or judge whether this war was worth it or not for Iraqis, let alone for Americans. We haven't even been able to see if there was a longstanding case of being unable to photograph coffins coming back into the United States. And so the whole idea of us being able to make an educated decision about costs and benefits, was it worth it or was it not, is that even plausible in an administration that's keeping us from seeing the true cost of the war, both here and abroad?
Max Boot?
Well, if you're looking for the true cost and the true benefits of the war, I wouldn't look to somebody like Michael Moore, who's incredibly one-sided, one-sided in one direction as the administration is in another. If you want to ask the Iraqis themselves, they have been asked. In fact, a couple of days ago, USA Today had the result of a poll of 1,900 Iraqis recently conducted, and 62% of them said their country is headed in the right direction. Only 23% said it's headed in the wrong direction. Iraqis have suffered an awful lot since the end of the Saddam Hussein regime, from the bombings and terrorism carried out by many of the same people who were terrorizing them for many decades past. But Iraqis, much more than Americans, are aware of the true cost that they paid under the Saddam Hussein regime, unlike Michael Moore, who portrayed pre-war Iraq as this kind of paradise where children flew kites and had a wonderful life. Iraqis realize the horrible price they paid under Saddam Hussein, being ruled by Saddam and his two maniacal sons, by their security apparatus, which wound up killing hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. So while things have been bad in many ways because of the continuing terrorist attacks the last couple of years, they were pretty bad for Iraqis before. And in many ways, things have improved. Economic life has improved and political life has improved. And you saw that with millions of Iraqis braving threats to turn out to vote. So I think that the verdict of most Iraqis on the invasion is not going to be as negative as Michael Moore's. It's going to be much more mixed.
Let's try to keep Michael Moore out of this conversation from here on in. Michael, did you want to come back? I guess Michael has left us as well. We thank him for the phone call. Let's go now to Chuck, and Chuck's with us from San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm also concerned by this fight them over there, fight them over here thing. In the first place, I really wonder how that sounds to Iraqis. But more than that, I'm worried that when we get done fighting them over there, we will be fighting them over here. Because in much the same way that I think al-Qaeda has some of their roots in the Soviet conflict in Afghanistan, I'm wondering if the insurgency over there is going to give rise to a much strengthened terrorist movement in terms of increasing recruitment and organization and financing and just strengthening the terrorist movement.
Max Boot, if al-Qaeda was not present in Iraq in any substantial numbers before the war, it certainly is now.
Well, that's true, but if we weren't fighting them in Iraq, we would probably be fighting them in Afghanistan or somewhere else, perhaps even in places like New York City. I mean, it's very hard to know what the ultimate result of the war is going to be in terms of recruiting for terrorism. Certainly, terrorists had no problem recruiting in the 1990s when American actions against them were relatively weak, when we hadn't invaded Afghanistan, when we hadn't invaded Iraq. They were recruiting just fine, and a lot of the reason why they were recruiting was because they said that America was a weak horse, a paper tiger, that we were ripe for destruction. They looked at the way we scuttled out of Somalia in 1993, and that emboldened them. I think the record indicates that if you're strong and they see that you're not vulnerable, that fewer people will rush to fight you. Now, the outcome in Iraq is still unclear, and certainly there have been a number of foreign fanatics who have come into Iraq in order to try to blow up Americans and Iraqis and other people who are fighting for democracy there. But in terms of what the overall impact on the global terrorist movement is, I think it's too soon to say. I certainly think that if we prevail in Iraq, that'll be a huge blow to the terrorist movement because, as Abu Musab al-Zarqawi himself has said on several occasions, the establishment of democracy in Iraq, and especially a democracy where the majority is Shiite and Kurdish, is going to be a tremendous blow to these Islamist fanatics.
I wish we were doing a better job of establishing democracy in Iraq. It seems that we've made so many mistakes in terms of failing to co-opt the Sunnis and firing the military and Abu Ghraib and transferring sovereignty to an unelected government. It kind of undermines what I think is a valuable goal and what we're pretty much committed to now. But as you mentioned, these terrorists that have moved into Iraq seem to be able to travel. And so whatever, and I do believe eventually, through the good efforts of a lot of fine Americans and Iraqis and other people, that Iraq will cool off. But when that happens, it seems to me that this insurgency will have spawned a great many people who hate the United States, who are trained in terrorist tactics and procedures, and who will be looking for something new to do. And I worry about that a lot.
Well, I think that's a legitimate concern, and certainly the point you raise about the mistakes that we've made along the way is absolutely correct. I mean, we have made numerous blunders, and we've made the job much harder than it needed to be in Iraq through mistakes such as not sending enough troops in the first place to secure the entire country and not sealing off the borders so as to prevent these foreign jihadis from coming in. There's no question that we've hurt ourselves. I guess the amazing thing in retrospect, looking back over the last 2 years, is that we're, all things considered, we're doing relatively okay considering all the mistakes and blunders that we've made. I mean, it's truly an edifying spectacle to see 60% of eligible Iraqi voters turning out to vote despite all this and basically saying that they have confidence in the direction the country is going in. Despite everything that's happened, despite all the mistakes we've made, I think we're basically on the right path, although we could have been there a lot sooner.
Hmm. Chuck, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
And Max Boot, I did want to ask you, the coalition that went into Iraq, at one point about 36 countries supporting it one way or another directly, now down to 24, and countries seem to be peeling off every day, at least the past week or so. 70% of Americans say the number of American casualties is already unacceptably high. 53% say the war was not worth it in the first place. Public support is going to be crucial to the completion of this war, to victory.
That's true, but I don't see any massive turn in the public against the war. I mean, I know the figures you're citing from the Washington Post ABC News poll, but the political reality is that President Bush, who was obviously closely associated with the war, was reelected, and he has solid majorities behind him in both houses of Congress, and there are certainly not massive demonstrations in the streets. You don't see the kind of anti-war movement you saw during the height of the Vietnam Wars. So I don't think there is much sense that public opinion has turned violently anti-war. And in fact, if you look more closely at that Washington Post ABC News poll, there is no push for an immediate pullout. Only something like 10% or so of the respondents say that we should pull troops out immediately. Most of them do want us to start reducing troop numbers, but don't think that we can do it overnight, which is essentially the position of the Bush administration. So I think the American public actually deserves a lot of credit for realizing that even if they weren't necessarily behind the war to begin with, that we have to stick it out. And even though I think President Bush could have leveled with the public a little bit more and prepared them for the kind of losses that we would face, I think the public has been pretty grown up about the whole thing and realized that war entails loss and it's not all glorious victories.
Max Boot, thank you. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
Max Boot, a contributing editor at the Weekly Standard. His latest book is The Savage Wars of Peace, Small Wars and the Rise of American Power, and he joined us from his home in Westchester County, New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And with us now is John Mearsheimer, professor at the University of Chicago, author of The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. He's with us from the studios at the university. And Professor Mearsheimer, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here, Neil.
We also spoke with you 2 years ago before the war started, and you were staunchly opposed. Have your views changed at all since?
No, I think that the war was a major mistake. In fact, I believe it was a tragic mistake. And I say that for two reasons. First of all, the threat that we were supposed to deal with never materialized. There was no serious threat of weapons of mass destruction, and there's no evidence, contrary to what the administration said in the run-up to the war, that Saddam Hussein was linked at the hip with al-Qaeda. But even more importantly, we had inspectors inside Iraq from December 2002 forward. So there was no way Saddam Hussein could get WMD and threaten us in any meaningful way. All of this is to say it was an unnecessary war. That's the first point. Second point is, if you look at the situation that now exists in Iraq, it's hard to understand how anybody could say that this has been a success. The fact is that the place is extremely dangerous, and we are faced with a major league insurgency. Americans cannot travel from the Green Zone to the Baghdad airport by road because the road is so dangerous. Furthermore, journalists can't leave their hotel to report on the war for fear they'll be killed. When the Iraqi parliament met yesterday, it had to meet inside the Green Zone because if it met outside the Green Zone, God knows what would have happened. I could go on and on to describe the extent to which this place has turned into the Wild West. And if we were to take the Americans out, it's almost for certain that you'd have a civil war. So the situation in Iraq is disastrous. And then when you look at the cost that the Americans are paying, we have over 1,500 Americans dead, 10,000-plus Americans physically wounded, many of them very badly wounded, countless psychologically wounded veterans, families ruined. The divorce rate is remarkably high. We're heading towards $300 billion in terms of the amount of money that we've paid for this war. And on top of all this, we have no exit strategy. So I don't see, given that there's no threat there and that we're enmeshed in a dangerous quagmire, how anybody could say that this war was worth it.
60% of Iraqis said it was in a recent poll.
Well, there are all sorts of polls from the Iraqis that say one thing. And then when you look at another poll, they say a different thing. It's hard to figure out for sure what they're saying. But from their point of view, they got rid of Saddam Hussein, so it probably is worth it. But the question is it worth it from the American perspective? And I don't think it was worth it from an American perspective. I'm interested in the Iraqi national, not the Iraqi national interest, but the American national interest.
And from that national interest, you see no gains whatsoever, even in those pictures of all those 8 million Iraqis holding up their violet fingers after voting.
Well, I'm glad that the Iraqis got to vote on January 30th. I think that's all for the good. But the argument that this is a case of democracy breaking out and now we're on our way to creating a happy and sweet democracy in Iraq, I think is a premature conclusion. I'd be very surprised. I'd be shocked if you end up with a meaningful democracy in Iraq.
We're speaking with John Mearsheimer. We'll continue our conversation after we take a short break and continue taking your calls. 2 years after the invasion of Iraq began, was it worth it? 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about the Iraq War 2 years after the invasion. Was it worth it? Be especially interested in hearing from you if your opinion has changed since the invasion 2 years ago. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest from the studios at the University of Chicago is John Mearsheimer, author of The Tragedy of Great Power Politics and Opponent of the War. And let's get some callers on the line. We'll go to Mike, and Mike's calling from St. Louis.
Hi, Neil. Thank you.
Sure.
I was strongly for the war after all the information seemed to have been out about the weapons of mass destruction and all these. But I was born in Germany, and I've always looked at the world through the eyes of if we had dealt with Hitler earlier, look at all the suffering that we would have avoided. If you compare the casualties that we've now taken, they're a drop in a tiny bucket compared to what we might have to deal in the future if Saddam had eventually gotten these weapons that we thought he had. I saw Saddam as playing both sides of the cards. He was essentially flourishing a deadly weapon at us while not having that weapon, and on one hand saying that he didn't have it, but allowing us to believe it that he did, and he overplayed his hand. But the war has gone badly because we are so safe in our society. We didn't have any sense of how brutalized Iraqi society was, and how you can't just put that whole brutalized society back together. And there's many factions in the Iraqi society that make it unstable, and people don't just happily pick up their constitutions and go about making a new government. It's going to take a long time, but the thesis is correct that we had to do what we did, and even though in a lot of cases we were wrong and we were very clumsy in prosecuting the war, because again our naivete about the lack of sense of how brutalized a society could be, that it would not immediately respond to our help.
Mm-hmm. John Mearsheimer, what do you make of that argument?
Well, if I believed that Saddam Hussein was the equivalent of Adolf Hitler, I would have been in favor of the war too. But the fact of the matter is that Saddam was not the equivalent of Adolf Hitler.
He wasn't equivalent.
First of all, you want to remember that he was our ally in the 1980s, and when he was brutalizing the Iranians and the Kurds with gas, we were assisting him in that process by providing him with overhead satellite imagery. Secondly, he was operating a very weak state. This was not the Wehrmacht that he had under his control, which is why we won the war so quickly. Furthermore, he was not a highly aggressive actor. He had started roughly two wars in the 30 years that he was in power. And in the second case, when he invaded Kuwait, he asked us for our permission, and we, in effect, gave it to him. And with regard to weapons of mass destruction, even if he had weapons of mass destruction, there was no way that he could have used them against us or blackmailed us with those weapons. The Soviet Union during the Cold War had thousands of nuclear warheads and was run by murderous thugs like Joseph Stalin, and they couldn't blackmail us or use those weapons against us. So there's no reason to think that Saddam could have done that. So I think the analogy that links Saddam with Hitler is a misplaced one.
May I respond to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
It's a good point. We've made all these very criminal alliances with Saddams of the world, but it was under the aegis of the threat of the larger enemy, the Cold War.
In Saddam's case, the greater threat was seen to be Iran. But go ahead.
Yeah, but now we have to deal with the realities of having won the Cold War and revisiting all those bad alliances that we made, and besides blaming ourselves, which I've done many times, that we've all these conditions that we created to make them mad at us, we just have to deal with it, and we have to do what we can to show the world what we are and make the best of it. In, it's not an ideal world, clearly, and, do what we have to do.
Go ahead. I'm going to thank Mike for his call. Yeah, go ahead.
Could I make a quick response to Mike?
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, Mike, I think the United States is still making alliances with thugs, despite all of the Bush administration's rhetoric about how we're interested in promoting democracy in the Arab and Islamic world. The fact of the matter is that we've done very little over the past 4 years when the Bush administration has been in power, and we're not going to do much in the foreseeable future to unseat thugs in the Arab and Islamic world. If you look at the websites today, you'll see that Condi Rice was in Pakistan praising the Musharraf government, which is hardly a democracy, for instituting democratic reforms that will lead up to the elections in 2007. The fact of the matter is that we are perfectly content to ally ourselves with Musharraf, who is a dictator, who overthrew a democratically elected government. And we've done that in other places in the Middle East and will continue to do so.
Let me ask you, before the war began, you and others were concerned about the idea that this might destabilize the Middle East. To the degree that there has been destabilization, it has been in what a lot of people regard in a positive direction. The UN said today they expect Syria to be fully out of Lebanon, for example, before Lebanese elections in May. Walid Jumblatt, the Druze socialist leader, no friend of President Bush's, said he hated to admit it, but all this began with the American invasion of Iraq, and he compared it to the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Well, 2 points. One is, I was not one of those people who argued that the entire Middle East was going to be, or even a large portion of the Middle East, would be destabilized. My main complaint with regard to the rest of the Middle East was that we would end up occupying another Arab country and therefore fueling the terrorism problem. But let's say a few words about the situation in Lebanon. I'm not sure that if you take Syria out of Lebanon, you will end up with a stable democracy. As you well know, the Syrians went in there in 1976, in large part because the place was the Wild West. We've had the Syrians in there for a long time, and both the Americans and the Israelis have been perfectly happy to have the Syrians in there to prevent Lebanon from spinning out of control. So I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised that if you take the Syrians out, you end up with a civil war in Lebanon, and you end up worse off, not better off, than the present situation.
Let's get another caller in. Mimi joins us from Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I could not agree more with your speaker. I'm just passionate and hysterical over the losses and the wounded and the civilians who have been, you know, countlessly destroyed, and the infrastructure of this country. And, you know, given that we went in, which was, of course, as we said, totally faulty, we should be going into about 10 other countries right now. And the loss of social services and budget cuts to our own needy people because of this. But I want to ask our speaker, what do you think is going to happen? How do you see us getting out of this in a dignified and in a decent and a moral way?
I find it very hard to predict the future here, and I find it very hard to see how do we get out of this in a decent and dignified way. The problem is that it's very hard to see how you can create a stable government in Iraq, given the contending forces. And in the absence of a stable government, it's hard to see how you can train the security forces that would serve that government.
They keep getting killed.
They keep getting killed, that's right. But more importantly than that, you still have not created a situation where the Kurds, the Shia, and the Sunnis have all come together to form a viable government. And that is the bedrock on which you can build security forces and you can build stability in the region. And I don't see us making any progress there. Neil had asked me before what I thought about the January 30th elections, and I'm very glad that you had those elections. But if you look at the results of those elections, what you see is that the Sunnis hardly voted at all, and the Kurds and the Shia, who did vote in large numbers, have been unable to come to an agreement to build a government that could serve as a bedrock for producing stability in Iraq. So I don't see, how the United States makes this one work over the long term.
The debates over the government in Iraq have been going on just for a few weeks. Are you ready to write it off now?
Well, what this tells me, Neil, is that even if they get an agreement, it's not clear that it's one that can stick. If you look at the disagreements between the Kurds and the Shia, and this is putting the Sunnis aside, who form the brunt of the insurgency, but if you look at the disagreements between the Kurds and the Shia, they may strike a deal now that temporarily solves the problem over Kirkuk and over whether or not the government is going to be a religious one or not. But the fact of the matter is those problems will be revisited, and they're a source of really significant trouble between those two sides. And again, that leaves out the Sunnis. Just very hard for me to see how you stop all these centrifugal forces from tearing the country apart in the absence of the United States, which means the United States is likely to be there for a long time. And that will not be a good thing, because I think we know now that an American occupation of an Islamic country is what produces terrorism, not the other way around.
Nimi, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you, dear.
We'll get one more caller in. This is Andy from Shaw Air Force Base.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm a little frustrated with this individual talking that we haven't done anything right, and I hate to be him and living so negatively in my life. What's he saying, that all the people that I've known in the military that have died or gotten hurt or have done it for no reason whatsoever, I wish he would go to each of their families and tell them this. We believe in the cause. I believe in the cause. And I wish he would stop speaking for us. Obviously, President Bush got elected, but the majority this time, like everybody's been complaining about, and the United States has spoken. They backed Bush up, and I wish he would just understand that the majority did speak, and the majority of the Iraqis did speak in the poll, in the latest poll that you guys were talking about.
Yeah,
so,
let's get a response from John Mearsheimer, because we're running out of time here. Thanks very much for the call, Andy. We appreciate
it. You're welcome.
I appreciate Andy's position, and I wish I could say positive things about the war. I wish that I had proved wrong. But the fact of the matter is that this war has turned out to be a disaster. I would note that I'm a West Point graduate, and I spent 10 years of my life in the American military between 1965 and 1975, which was coterminous with the Vietnam War. And during that war, 58,000 Americans died. And I think it's fair to say in retrospect that those were all wasted lives. That, too, was an unnecessary and foolish war. And it pains me greatly that 58,000 Americans died in that cause. And it pains me greatly that we have approximately 13,000 casualties in this war already. And more are coming.
John Mearsheimer, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Neil.
John Mearsheimer is the author of The Tragedy of Great Power Politics and the R. Wendell Harrison Distinguished Service Professor at the University of Chicago, and he joined us from their studios in Chicago. Next week on Talk of the Nation, The War at Home, how the continuing conflict impacts our communities and our lives. We need your help. We want to hear your stories. If the war has touched your workplace, your town, your congregation, or your home, send us an email, TOTN at NPR.org. Please put War at Home in the subject line.